From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point. And I'm going to start this way today. Aminatu, could you tell me about your friend Anne? If I asked you, how would you describe her? What would you say?
Thank you so much for having me today, Meghna. My friend Anne, where do I even start? She's a woman whose brain I am completely obsessed with. She is sharp. She is smart. She is funny. She is kind. She always asks the right questions. She is curious. She is dedicated to living out her values and cares about making the world a better place. She is my friend and she is my witness in this life.
And you must be blushing, tearing up, your ears are burning. I don't know, hearing that lovely description of you. So I'm going to turn the same question to you, Anne. How would you describe Aminatu?
Oh, Meghna, I'm fully in tears right now. Thank you for seeing that. my friend Aminatu is a woman of substance, truly. She's also a woman of style. Love that you can get both of those things in one package. She is so witty. I laugh so hard at the things that she observes about this world. She is deeply generous, deeply, deeply generous and kind to the people she loves, but also very often to total strangers. She is firm in her beliefs in a way that has made me firmer in mine. She has an incredible laugh, like an infectious, infectious laugh. And yeah, her brain. I want to know what she thinks about pretty much everything in this world. And yeah, and I'm really proud to call her my friend.
Yeah. Well, so Anne and Aminatu are actually Anne Friedman and Aminatu So. And you might have heard their podcast because they're co-hosts of the podcast called Call Your Girlfriend, where they talk about and tell the story of their profound friendship. And they have a new book out. It's called Big Friendship, How We Keep Each Other Close. We've got an excerpt of the book at onpointradio.org. And we're so delighted to have both of you on the program today because we thought, what better time? You know, in a year where we've all needed each other perhaps more than ever to talk about the importance of friendships and cultivating them and tending to them. So first of all, and Aminatu and Anne, obviously, since you know each other extremely well and do this podcast, feel free to just jump in and anyone can answer the questions I'm throwing out. I'll just throw them out to both of you. How would you describe the genesis of your friendship?
That's such a good question. You know, I think a lot of people get asked this question, and usually in a romantic context. We are both obsessed with asking friends how they met and how they know each other, because the way people tell that story oftentimes tells you so much about them. And so our meet cute, as it would, we were set up by a friend in Washington, D.C. Our friend Daya Olapade, who is an amazing woman, knew that we had to know each other. And she engineered a meeting for us at watching television at her house. It was very, very a decade ago. You used to have to go to someone's house to watch appointment television, and that is how we met.
Is that the same story you'd tell, Anne?
Yeah, more or less. And I also think an important facet of it is that we met at a time in both of our lives when we were really thinking about the kind of adults we wanted to be in the world, and we were really just beginning to shape our paths. And I think it's important to mention that we met when we were in this formational period, which is often associated with maybe high school or college, if you go to college, like where you are really developing yourself and figuring out who you are in relation to the people around you. But for us, that was certainly true in our mid to late 20s when we met. And I think it's one reason we became close so fast.
Yeah. So then what I want to dig into with both of you obviously has everything to do with what you've written in your book, Big Friendship, right? So what turned this initial sort of spark of friendship into what you call a big friendship? How did that happen?
You know, we fell very fast for each other. We went from zero to 100 very, very, very quickly. And, you know, and I think the thing that Anne was saying is true. We were just at a period in our lives where we were trying to figure out, you know, answer the question of who do I want to be in the world, and met someone else who was trying to figure that out. And we jumped in without asking too many questions. And I think that over the years, you know, we started to realize, oh, this thing that we are doing is not, it's not unusual, but we are also not explicitly telling the world that we are a unit. It is just not an experience of friendship that you have, that people take your friendship as seriously as it takes, you know, the other relationships that you have in your life. And, you know, very quickly we became enmeshed in each other's lives. And then, you know, 5 years after becoming friends, we also became colleagues in essence. And, you know, that meant getting business married in a real sense. It meant putting down more roots. And we have just watched our relationship evolve from there.
Wow. Okay. So this is actually my chance to, I want to play a little bit from the podcast, Call Your Girlfriend, because I'm going to ask you, well, it's like, okay, so you have this amazing friendship, this initial profound spark. So let's make a podcast out of it. Why not? But this is from the pilot episode of Call Your Girlfriend back in 2014.
I love smug Californians better than I love smug New Yorkers, though, I will say. And I live in New York. I mean, you guys are allowed to be.
When our avocado intake gets low, there's like no accounting for.
Listen, right now there are no avocados, there are no limes. This is the brave new world that we're
But this is really the inherent tension of this podcast anyway, that like we, then in truth, though we have been friends for 5 years.
Yeah, whoa.
I know.
Really? 5?
I know. We're like right up on our anniversary. In fact, I think it was a few weeks ago.
No, I think it's next week.
It's next week.
It's on our calendars. It's sometime in May.
Let's not have this fight in front of the public.
I think you're right.
Okay.
That's a clip from the pilot episode of Call Your Girlfriend. So Anne, what inspired the idea of talking about your friendship and the nature of friendships in a podcast?
We can really blame only Gina Delvac, our brilliant producer, who suggested to us, probably maybe in 2013 or maybe early 2014, that our dynamic might translate well to a podcast. And, you know, she has a background in radio and I will say a great ear for such things. But when she mentioned this, we were like, oh, are you kidding? Ha, 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 no. And then the more we thought about it, it kind of made sense. I think Aminatu was like, if all of these comedy bros can have podcasts, because that's who had podcasts back then, how hard can it be? We should try this. And I think that the real appeal was not so much turn our friendship into a podcast. That's not really what it felt like. It just felt like we wanted another project to explore each other's ideas and spend time together with more structure. So it really felt more like a strange hobby we were picking up than a business or some kind of public endeavor we were entering into.
And Aminatu, would you agree?
I absolutely agree. I think, you know, it was really apparent to me early on in our friendship that we were two people who just really like spending structured time together. We are both very nerdy. And the prospect of learning audio together was, for me, just another opportunity to spend more time with Anne and also more time with Gina. And we showed up doing that project for a really, really, really long time before anyone was paying attention to it.
Okay. Well, and so the interesting thing is, and as the podcast evolves, and we'll get to this in detail in a bit, there were things going on in the background about in terms of the DNA of your friendship that were challenging. So I'm sort of teasing listeners with that a little bit, and we will get to it in a second. But to circle back to this idea of big friendship, though, what's the difference between big friendship and, I don't know, a regular acquaintance or a more casual friendship?
I mean, the word friend can mean so many different things right now. We use it to describe people who we almost barely know, who we might be connected to in a broader social circle. And we also use it to describe people who we would like, who we want next to us in the last moments on earth. You know, I mean, there's this huge range, and we, you know, like the tagline of our podcast is, you know, a podcast for long distance besties everywhere. You know, we've used some of the existing language around close friendships, but really it doesn't fit that well. I mean, to say best friend is not fully accurate. There's not a hierarchy in either of our lives where, you know, yes, we are very close to each other, but we both have other friends who are, you know, lifelong, intimate parts of our lives. And so we were really lacking a vocabulary for the kind of friendship that is non-exclusive, adult, committed, long-term. Big friendship is just what we came up with to describe that.
Hmm. And Anne, what do you think?
That was Anne.
Forgive me. I'm so sorry. This is one of the disadvantages of not being able to see you guys face to face. But totally. Aminatu, then what do you think?
I really agree with that. You know, part of what we were really trying to get at in writing this book, I think, in so many of the conversations that Anne and I have about friendship, is really coming up with a vocabulary for what friends mean to each other. You know, and there's just this expectation, I think, that long, deep, lasting friendships are something that you learned in childhood, or that the friends that you made when you were in high school or in college or even an earlier point in life are the friends that you are going to sail through life with. And no one really talks about how much work that is, and you know, and how many other competing interests will just crop up in the normal everyday of life. And we were really trying to come together at an understanding that no, we mean a lot to each other. It is going to be a lot of work to want to stay in each other's lives. And, you know, that's not something that is unique to our friendship.
Yeah. So we're going to talk about what that work was and why it's so important. I'm joined today by Aminatu So and Anne Friedman. They are co-hosts of the podcast Call Your Girlfriend and co-authors of the new book Big Friendship: How We Keep Each Other Close. And we're talking about the importance of these deep, lasting, mature friendships and why, in order to keep them as fulfilling as possible, they do take work. So we'll explore that more when we come back. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/onpoint. That's Indeed.com/onpoint. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour with Aminatu So and Anne Friedman. They're hosts or co-hosts of the podcast Call Your Girlfriend, and they have a new book out. It's called Big Friendship: How We Keep Each Other Close. And it's a fabulous exploration of the importance of mature, long-lasting friendships. Now, Aminatu and Anne, we just sort of put this call out to On Point listeners saying that we were going to talk to the two of you today, and we wanted folks to share their stories about their long-term close friendships, and we got a whole lot of answers. So let's listen to On Point listeners and some of their messages.
I'd like to talk to you about my friendship of, let's see, I got to do the takeaway on this, 54 years. Kelly and I met and became pen pals in 1974 when I was 9 and she was 8. You do the math.
We sometimes don't talk for months, and then we'll talk for 2 or 3 hours at a time on the phone.
We have seen each other through high school, through college, through young adulthood.
We were at the births of each other's children, and she came when my son had cancer when he was 3 years old.
We have reported on family, jobs, losses. I officiated her husband's funeral.
She's recently had a stroke, just a tiny one, but we're doing okay. you know, we just support each other because we never know what life's going to bring us.
Well, those were the voices of On Point listeners, Kathleen from Ketchikan, Alaska, Noreen from Columbus, Ohio, Carla from St. Louis, Missouri, and Kratika from Nashua, New Hampshire, and Wanda from Lexington, Kentucky, sharing how much their long-term friendships mean to them. And Aminatu and Anne, I mean, we were hearing about friendships that have been going on for decades and decades. But tell me, when you hear those voices, and Aminatu, I'll just start with you. What is it that these big friendships bring that others don't? I'm still not quite clear about how you would answer that, because it doesn't seem as if many people would say, like, I have like 15 big friendships. They might say, like, I've got one or two friends that are really with me through life.
Ugh, I am having a full body, physical, very emotional experience just listening to those messages. It makes me feel so hopeful about my own friendships and about the state of friendship in general. I think that, you know, what I hear in all of these messages is that people have found at least one person who is a source of just deep, deep, deep knowing, love, and self-knowledge. We write in our book that, you know, part of the importance of friendship is that friends hold up a mirror that you can see yourself in. And as humans, selfishly, you know, self-knowledge is a really important and powerful experience. And one of the ways to learn about yourself and to be a whole person and to be a person who can love well and a person who can receive love is to have a friend. We relegate a lot of this kind, you know, these kinds of emotions, I think, to our great detriment to romantic relationships alone. And, you know, we know this from talking to our friends, and we know this from our own lives, and clearly from the calls that we're hearing from your listeners, that some of the greatest romances that you can have are with your friends. And, you know, and I think that we are all really longing to make that connection and to have that acknowledged.
Yeah. Well, so I just want to note that we've in that montage, we heard a lot of women's voices, but we're not just talking about friendships between women, right? I mean, we're talking about big friendships across, you know, between men, across genders. And I mean, in addition, and in the case of you and Aminatu, across race as well.
That's right. I mean, one thing about a big friendship is that when it crosses a big divide in identity, or when you are people who are experiencing this world very differently, it is a real point of empathy sometimes. It's a way of understanding in a kind of deep and intimate way someone else's experience in this world. And I'm really talking specifically about my experience as a white friend in this interracial friendship with a Black woman. I feel my understanding of the world has just been immeasurably deepened by my relationship with Aminatu. And you know, and I think that that is great and valuable and to be celebrated. And then we also have to recognize that that comes at a cost to her in terms of having to explain her experience, or having moments that are maybe painful to her in real time that get to be a learning experience for me, and that are maybe not painful in the same way, difficult as they may be. Yeah. And so that feels very powerful and important.
Well, so Aminatu, do you want to talk more about that? Because you write, both of you write about this specific thing in the book. I mean, there's that a chapter, I can't remember what chapter number it is, but one that you call the trap door about sort of some experiences where what Anne was talking about really came to the fore for both of you. Can you tell me more about that?
Yeah, you know, in the book, we write about a very small seeming, you know, I would say almost petty incident, because I think that there is, you know, there is an expectation that when we're talking about racism, it's this very dramatic, You know, there someone is wearing a hood at, or someone says out a racial slur, and that's very, you know, it's something that happens in the South. Anne lives in Los Angeles. I live in New York. Racism exists in those places, and racism also exists in intimate relationships between Black and white people, because we live in a world that is largely racist. And, you know, Anne and I had to come to acknowledge that even though we are two people who are very adept about talking about racism, talking about politics and all of these events as they happen in the world, we were both caught off guard that those same dynamics were possible in our relationship, and that they required a different kind of talk when the pain is caused by the white friend that you love. And so in this chapter, we really explore this idea of the trapdoor of racism, which is a concept that the cultural critic Wesley Morris really has written about and very graciously talked to us about in the book. And it is basically, you know, the limitation that is imposed on any relationship between a white person and a Black person, whether you like it or not, whether you do it on purpose or not, because of the world that we live in. An incident will arise that will force you both to confront the facts that, you know, that we live in a white racist world, and the white friend will have to either rise up to the occasion and handle it, or a lot of times really just fails to acknowledge something that is happening. And I think that if you talk to many people of color, Black people included, this is something that we intimately know, you know, and it does not have to be dramatic. It is something that is, it's always very small. Wesley says that, you know, it's almost like a drop of mustard just falling on your pants, and then you have to decide whether you acknowledge it or not, but now it's awkward, you know? And Anne is right. The price to be paid for a white person in an intimate relationship with a Black person receiving this, what we call an aha moment, this racial awakening moment that for them is very powerful and very deep, and, you know, gives them the gift of really knowing more about what is going on in the world, comes at a cost for those of us who are not white. And it is a choice to stay in these relationships and to keep fighting for them and to talk about them. You know, we think that politics is not just, you know, the presidential race or who is in Congress. Politics is how you organize your life, who you are friends with, who you carpool with, who you go to church with, who you date. All of those choices, the small p of politics, end up having bigger ramifications in the world. And so if you are a white person, for example, who does not have Black people in your life, it can ring really hollow when you start to care about the Black Lives Matter movement, for example, or you start becoming really vocal, you know, about recent events in the news, because your life is not reflective of that stance necessarily.
Right.
And I think that, you know, in these relationships, we have to be very generous with each other, but also acknowledge that there is really deep pain that is possible there.
Hmm. Well, you know what? This seems to be a perfect moment to bring in a couple more voices. So Aminatu and Anne, can hang on here for just a second, because long-term relationships and the work, or friendships and the work that it takes to care for them and nurture them, even when life paths might diverge for a while, is something that we heard from a couple of On Point listeners that we invited onto the show today to share their story. So Julia Lawrence joins us from Madison, Wisconsin. She's an On Point listener, and she actually was a person who left us a voicemail yesterday about her relationship with her friend Michelle. Julia, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
It's really great to have you. And Michelle Kish, your friend, is also with us from Carlisle, Pennsylvania. Michelle, welcome to you.
Hello.
Hi, it's so wonderful to have you both, and I would love to just hear your story a little bit. When did the two of you first meet? And Michelle, I'll start with you and become friends. When did you first meet?
Well, last night, knowing we were going to be on today, I was digging through some old memoirs, and I found my baby book. And under friendships, there's only one entry, and it's from my mother, about the little girl next door who was born 2 weeks before I was, has become my first best friend. So we have been best friends since month one.
Wow. And Julia, I mean, like, what is that friendship then meant to you over that time? What was it like when you were, let's say, I don't know, 10 years old?
Yeah, I was reflecting on this as well, and I realized there's no way for me to even describe what my life was like before or could have been without knowing Michelle, because she's just been in my life just like a sibling would be almost. So at 10, I would say I was extremely shy. Michelle was extremely outgoing. And for me personally, one of the ways that she's influenced my life is that she was really the person that kind of provided social cover for me all the way from preschool through high school graduation. Without Michelle, I think I would have had a lot more social anxiety than I even did. But just knowing that I would see her face every day at school was one of the things that got me through those early years of being really shy and insecure.
Hmm. Now, and both of you sort of, correct me if I have this wrong, but a religious life was a major part of your early friendship too. Is that right, Michelle?
Well, we both attended Christian school for 12 of those years. I think preschool and kindergarten, those were public. So, you know, it was a central teaching that we both grew up with and were common. My mother was a pastor and she was on staff at a church. So I think my experience was probably more immersive. And then after graduation, I think we kind of took different paths after that. And
mm-hmm. So that's, I appreciate you bringing that point up, because it was what I was hoping to explore a little bit with both of you. I mean, Julia, how would you describe what those different paths were and what effect did it have on your friendship?
Yeah, so I think heading into university, you know, in our freshman year, Michelle got married and she married a pastor. And in the meantime, I was studying political science and exploring my views politically. And I was moving away from the church and moving away from the religious perspective or belief system that we had both been raised in. And that did create some challenges for us, for sure, and knowing how to talk to each other. I think that there was a lot of concern on Michelle's part for me, and I was confused about our differing political views as well, because I was getting more and more impassioned about my own perspective at that time. And like kind of a typical 18 or 19-year-old, I was pretty black and white in my thinking. Maybe I hadn't yet had enough life experience to see the gray.
So Michelle, did the two of you kind of drift apart during that time? Is that what I'm hearing?
We were on very different pages for a uh-huh. while. I got married right out of high school, and she was determined not to get married. And there was at one point I was a young pastor's wife and she was a Buddhist, and you know, of course those views continued to evolve too. And you know, as we grow and we change, the bedrock of love and friendship that we had, it was hard not to be on the same page for the first time in our lives. Mm-hmm. But I don't think it shook our friendship at all. We knew that that was solid, and we knew that no matter how diverse our beliefs or our thoughts or our opinions at that current time, we were solid. And yeah. it just took time for us to find similar pages again.
Michelle, forgive me, I didn't mean to interrupt you there, but I was just responding to what you're saying, because this is so important to hear, I think, in America right now, today, because it's not uncommon to hear folks say, well, I could never be friends with a person who believes X. Right, I mean, those divides are very, very deep. So Julia, I mean, what was it that allowed I mean, I presume some of those differences still exist, but what's allowing your friendship to transcend that, that sort of brought the two of you together again to experience that same mutually nurturing relationship that you had, you know, back when you were 10 years old?
Yeah, I've thought about this too, because I absolutely have experienced the estrangement of several long-term relationships over the past 3 or 4 years where political opinions have diverged. And some of those friendships are also very long-standing. So I was pondering what the difference is. And Michelle really summed it up well when she said, you know, the difference might be between compatibility and love. You know, love is really the bedrock of our friendship. And so it goes well beyond the compatibility that we have at any given moment.
But I presume it took work, though. It still takes work, right?
Absolutely. It was, you know, there were some very impassioned letters we wrote back and forth to each other trying to convince the other side, until it just became so painful that we paused for a while and stopped doing that.
Well, but obviously it was worth the work, because the two of your good friends have a big friendship and are here with us today. So Julia Lawrence and Michelle Kish, thank you so much for sharing your story with us. And Aminatou and Anne, we'll be right back to hear more from you. This is On Point.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Scene. Listen and follow Last Scene wherever you get your podcasts.
Smart journalism. Fascinating topics. Words that describe CNN's podcast, The Assignment with Audie Cornish.
Last year, the Army missed its recruitment goal. It had 65,000 spots to fill and came up 10,000 short of that target. Why is it so hard to recruit? How's the Pentagon responding? And how are the voices of service members on social media shifting the balance?
Listen to The Assignment with Audie Cornish wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Today, we are talking with Aminatou Sow and Anne Friedman. They are co-hosts of the podcast Call Your Girlfriend, and their new book is Big Friendship, How We Keep Each Other Close. And we're talking about the importance of mature, long-lasting friendships. And Aminatou and Anne, I was just really overwhelmed with the listener response to this hour. So I want to hear from just a couple more people really quickly. This is Glenn from Hemis Springs, New Mexico.
My best friend is my 32-year-old son, Justin. Since he was born until the present, he has become not only my best friend, but also my hero. He is one of the finest human beings I know, and I am open to my own son, my hero, correcting me when I need some correction as his father. He is one of the most sensitive, alert, brilliant human beings I know.
That's On Point listener Glenn. And here's Tala from North Carolina. She left us a message about her 30-year best friendship.
Been through divorces, marriages. We're both in our mid-50s. And she's probably saved me $1 million in therapy. And in our friendship, unlike a lot of friendships, we've never been ugly to one another. We've never disrespected one another. We've always been able to call each other out if we say something hurtful. It's probably the most important relationship in my life.
Well, that's Tala, who left us that message from North Carolina. Okay, so Anne, here you and Aminatou have this deep, profound, big friendship. You talk about it very openly in your podcast. Listeners might come away with this sense that maybe it was like the ideal friendship that we all wish we had. And yet, as you're doing all this, I guess it's time to get real. This behind the scenes, there were challenges. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, it was a period that I think was very lonely for both of us, for a couple of reasons. There was, for the first time, a real communication breakdown in our friendship, and things that had previously been easy for us to talk about with each other, things that felt vulnerable or risky, kind of slowly became more difficult for us to broach. And the best we can figure now, with the benefit of lots of hindsight and reflection, is that it started as some maybe small communication issues. And slowly over time, the kind of third rail topics that we were afraid to touch with each other just grew and grew. And one reason it took so long for us to acknowledge, first to ourselves and then to each other, what was happening is because, like that last listener, we were never ugly with each other. There was never mm-hmm. anything that was like openly mean or, dramatic. There was no big blowout or incident. It was just an accumulation of a lot of things. And so it took us a long time to really clock what was happening. I think for us also, because we had this working relationship that allowed us to a little bit ignore the things that were not going right in our friendship behind the scenes. Our working relationship was fine through this whole period. You know, we really still enjoyed showing up and making the podcast together. And that allowed us to really put off for a long time acknowledging that this distance had crept between us. And when we finally did acknowledge it, it took a lot of effort to get our previous intimacy and vulnerability and attachment back.
Yeah. So Aminatu, I mean, I think when people hear stories about very profound friendships going through periods of difficulty, it's easy to assume it was because of some big falling out. But most of the time, as Anne just described in your case, the case for the two of you, that just wasn't what happened. It's sort of the more mundane creeping in of gaps and distances. Did you feel that happening as it was happening, or is it something that the two of you had to acknowledge when it just became unavoidable?
Oh, you're so right about that. You know, I in some ways it would have been so much easier if there had been a thing to be angry about, because mm-hmm. it's so much easier to name. And in the book we write, you know, if there was something like the equivalent of walking in on your friend with your spouse, then you can be really angry and know that someone has misbehaved in a really big way. But for us, you know, it really was that very cliched, we are just growing apart and we are not talking about it. And I think that at different points for both of us, we were feeling it, but not talking to each other about it. And now with the benefit of hindsight, you know, I think I understand so much why it's important to, even if you cannot name the feeling, to just tell your friend, hey, this is not sitting right with me, and I'm trying to figure out how I feel about it. I was having that conversation with myself, but I was not having it with Anne at all, you know, and I think that the tendency is to think that if you are silent, that nothing is happening, but people make meaning out of silence, you know, on both ends. And so for us, it really was that. It was just, we were missing each other. And over the course of a couple of years, the things that we were comfortable talking to each other about just became smaller and smaller and smaller. And, you know, part of having a big, intense, intimate friendship, like a caller said very, very early on in that montage that you played, they said that they called their friend every day and talked for hours. At this lonely period of our lives, I don't know that we would have had anything to talk about that wasn't the weather report. And that is such a telling sign of how you feel about someone, the things that you can say to them and the things that you don't feel safe saying to them.
To be honest, just hearing you guys recount the feelings that you had during this challenging time, it's like it's squeezing my heart because this process of this person who with whom, and this is what I think big friendships really, one of the most profound things they do is they create this space between two people where there's a unique kind of freedom, right? When you were talking about how you could talk about anything, and yet to realize that space for that freedom was shrinking is so heartbreaking. But you guys did something about it, right? So Anne, what did the two of you do to try and sort of to stretch and recreate and recapture your big friendship?
I think there were a couple of phases. You know, the first phase of this being us stewing separately and alone. And then there was a period where we were able to acknowledge to each other that things were not great, but that was kind of it. Like, we didn't really know beyond saying, I don't feel good in this friendship anymore, like what we could do about it. And so I think during that period, I in particular was just thinking about like, okay, what can I do to engineer a situation that feels like the early days of our friendship? Like, I want us to just be able to talk like we just met, you know, without any of these feelings of, you know, insecurity in our relationship. I want to just feel hopeful and show up as myself. But it turned out that was a lot harder once we had this pattern of kind of avoiding certain topics and avoiding each other. So we tried to go away together. We had like a spa getaway weekend, which sounds so lovely and relaxing, and was honestly so stressful because we were both, you know, the thing that Aminatu just said about not having a lot to talk about becomes very apparent when you go away together. And, you know, it was clear that that was not going to be a path to reconnection for us, just sitting across a table from each other and having dinner. We really realized that we needed some intervention from someone who maybe had some experience in helping people get over having hurt each other or the emotional gaps in a close relationship.
So spa weekend did not fix things.
Shocking.
I mean, not too little earlier, we heard that that On Point listener who said that her friend has probably saved her $1 million in therapy over many, many years. But just to put a fine point on it, the two of you decided that like this friendship needed a kind of help that you sought out friends therapy. Is that right?
I mean, you know, it became really apparent to us, knowing each other as well as we did, that we were going to need adult intervention in order to be able to talk. When we finally sat down and, you know, had that moment of, I remember Anne just telling me, this feels awful. Those were her actual words. And I think that for so long, those were the words I was afraid of. But hearing her say them, actually, it felt like relief because it meant that I was not, I was not alone in feeling not well. It was also an opening for saying, okay, we don't feel good about where we are at, but perhaps there is a way that we can learn to communicate. And I think that, we arrived at therapy a couple of different ways. In my own process, I was just trying to find, what are models for repair and what are models for conversation. I'm in individual therapy in my own life, but it had not occurred to me that was something I could go to with a friend, you know? And what I was hearing loud and clear from Anne was that she was not feeling good about our friendship, but she might be interested in repairing it. And so that was a real opening for us. It's also true that, you know, because we work together, the framework was a little easier for us to understand. Like, we had heard of other co-founders or people who work together getting coaching or therapy. So it didn't feel so strange when you thought about it as a work construct, even though for us, the issue was not work at all. But you learn a lot about someone when you have to hire a therapist with them. And I think the first thing that you learn is that they are as uncomfortable as you are, and they are as willing as you are to try to fix the problem. And I think that giving each other the benefit of the doubt when things are not going well is so important. Like, I knew Anne so well that I knew that the mere suggestion of therapy, her willingness to do it, meant that this was really serious. And that it was something that we should consider. And,
you know, the other listener said that her friend has saved her millions in therapy. I will say that my friendship has cost me thousands of dollars in therapy. And, you know, but it is, and I say that because, you know, therapy is not something that is available to people. It is really expensive, right. And it's such a privilege to be able to afford it. And I think that that really bears repeating. We don't live in a country that that offers that kind of support for friendship or support in general for mental health. And so this is not a solution that we would advocate for everyone. And for us, it was a stretch, but we were able to do it. And it's a literal investment in our relationship. And I think we also, you learn a lot about someone when you have to do this process together. We had to talk about, you know, what kind of therapist do we want? It was important to us that this person be feminist minded. It was important to us that they understood how to work with Black clients. It was important to us that they knew that we were not there for a work problem. We were really two friends in a platonic relationship trying to wade our way through. And we had to interview a lot of people. We ended up switching therapists halfway through you know, our engagement with our first therapist. And let me tell you, if you can fire a therapist with someone, I think you might be okay. you know, and it involved a lot of really painful kind of logistics. But again, you know, you have to take people at their word, and you also have to see the actions by which they show you what they mean. And this time of our lives was extremely painful. But over and over again, I saw Anne do things that I knew were hard for her to do. And I really appreciated them.
Yeah. So, I mean, your point about therapy not being an option for many people, it's very, very well taken. And in fact, that's frequently, like, we look to our friends to sort of serve as a place to have those kinds of conversations. But what I hear both of you saying loud and clear is that, in addition, it's the friendship itself that needs care and nurturing and work to keep it as healthy and loving as possible. So we just got like a sort of a minute and a half left here to go. And Anne, I'm curious what you think about this. So what would you tell people now, especially in a time where maybe people haven't been able to see each other face to face for months, or politics is always risks dividing people even further? How would you recommend that they do the work to care for their big friendships?
Well, one thing that they can do is name the feelings that they're having in a friendship, even if they don't fully understand them yet. And I think Aminatou mentioned this earlier, just being able to articulate, like, I'm feeling some distance here, or I find myself not wanting to talk about this thing that's happening in my life. And I just want to acknowledge that. And even that, I think, can be an opening. If we had done that, maybe things wouldn't have gotten to a point where we needed, you know, to sit in a therapist's office to figure it out. So that's one thing. I also think it can be hard to broach some of the difficult stuff in friendship because we don't have the security that, like, maybe biological family or, you know, like marriage offers, which is to say, you know, a piece of paper or a blood relation or some kind of long-term assurance. And so you can say to your friends, hey, I want to be in this for the long haul. Like, you can make that assurance even when things are good, that, like, hey, you can come to me when things don't feel okay because this is something I'm invested in. Or, you know, to borrow a phrase from one of your listeners, the bedrock of this friendship is love. I really want to remain in it with you.
Well, Anne Friedman, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
And yeah, and Aminatou So, thank you as well.
Thank you very much, Meghna. We hope you have a wonderful rest of your day.
Likewise to the both of you. Aminatou and Anne are co-hosts of Call Your Girlfriend, the podcast, and co-authors of Big Friendship. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.